Well, good morning. Thank you, Chairman. It's beholden on me to give a brief introduction to polyhalite, as I'm the first one of a series of polyhalite lectures which you're attending now. There's some legal stuff, and there'll be a test on this at the end of the presentation. Right, so the aim of my presentation really is to just underline the fact that sometimes a fertiliser which we buy actually delivers more than just its nutrient value. So I want to sort of open your mind a wee bit. In terms of background, we're very lucky at Sirius Minerals. We have access to the Zechstein deposit. That is a marine evaporite which was set down 250 million years ago, just about the extinction of the dinosaurs, my understanding. So polyhalite is a potassium, calcium, magnesium sulfate. We take an ore out of the ground. It happens to be about 90% pure. If you want to know what it contains, well, we guarantee a 14% K2O content, 90% S, 6% MgO, and a 17% calcium oxide. The mineral itself comes out of the ground as a raw chunk rock. That then is crushed and micronized to a powder and regranulated into a standard agricultural pellet, which would spread, store, etc., and manually handle as you'd expect. By way of just filling in the gap there, between the 90% and the 100%, actually, the remaining content is gypsum, anhydrite, shuanite, kieserite, and mica. And it's mica which actually contains some of these additional trace elements, which are also beneficial plant nutrients. By way of where we are in our own personal evolution, we've been doing agronomics trials for 4 years. We have 150 field trials. We've been doing it in 13 countries and broached 24 crops. Just want to touch base now just to prove base one. Yes, it is a potassium fertilizer. These are results from balanced NPK trials. The blue, being dark blue or light blue, represents 100% yield. The additional green extension to the bar then gives you the increment, which I guess we can attribute to the additional elements beyond beyond K. If you're comparing to MOP, that would be the calcium, magnesium, and the sulfur. And beyond the potassium source SOP, then you'd be attributing the increased yield to the magnesium and the calcium content. So, in the course of all these trials, what we've managed to do is highlight a number of additional benefits, which partly are due to the multinutrient nature, partly due to the dissolution rate, because it's a mineral. You don't get massive hits of potassium in the soil solution, and that does not promote iron antagonism. So we get these sort of benefits. So what I'm going to touch on now is one or two of the benefits which we ascribe to calcium and magnesium, which comes from polyhalite in this format. So along the route, we recognize calcium that comes from poly, and everybody is fully aware that the industry understands that calcium can have an influence in the distribution and proliferation of the flagellate part of this life cycle. So what we need to know is there any effect on this? Because the industry suffers at the moment from potentially 15 to 20% yield loss. It can suffer on occasions up to 50% economic income loss. So what we did, we went to the Food and Environment Research Agency, which is not far from us, up there in York, and we conducted a pot study to demonstrate the value of some of these divalent cations from polyhalite and whether they would suppress club root development. In short, the answer is yes. Now, if you look at the top right-hand graphic there, what you'll see is a response of a club root organism as assayed by qPCR. And you've got a y-axis that says picograms of DNA per gram in the soil. In an NK balanced trial, you'll see that the soil itself is very sufficient in terms of phosphorus, so none was added in this particular case. Adding K from MOP actually seemed to support an increase in DNA found from this organism. And as you might expect, you see a depression when you add magnesium. If you substitute the same K for K, as delivered from polyhalite, what you're ending up with is actually a depression and therefore a reduction in threat from this organism. So that was very positive, and possibly a reason that you might want to consider your particular source of nutrients in relation to the fertilizer that are available. Now, what else can calcium do? Well, we're all fully aware that divalent cations have an effect on soil strength. Now, this top left-hand photograph is actually from my hometown, South Wales, of 48 inches of rain per year, usually steeply sloped sandy soils. And, well, if you plough it to put some crop in and it rains and the soil is weak, then it gets washed away, which is pretty bad news for the environment. And it's also pretty bad news for the back pocket of the farmer because his fertile soil is being washed down into the ditch. So the soil we did this test is actually from Aberdeen. It's a weak strength soil with a low Young's modulus as well. So Young's modulus obviously measures its resistance to compression, so wheel traffic, and the tensile strength gives an indication of its resistance to erosion. What we did is set up the standard test, which is what's called the Brazil test. So you create a patty of soil, it goes through several wetting and drying cycles, and then you crush it under this platen. That gives an indication of its tensile strength or its resistance to fracture. The result that you get is a very significant increase in soil tensile strength. And what I'm not showing here, but it is actually true as well, is you see an increase in Young's modulus as well. So both of these are going to be helpful in terms of agricultural use and actually helpful in terms of retaining your soil in the field where you'd like it to stay. If we went and did the similar sort of trial with a range of soils from around the world, and I put them all into one statistical analysis, what you find is that there is no differences and you can't pull trends out. What it means in actual fact then is that you have to treat every soil as an individual. And what we're seeing here, the groups of graphics are increasing rates of polyhalite addition and the tensile strength which results. Now, the previous soil was inch soil, which is a 1400 parts per million calcium soil. What you see next to that is the Cruden Bay soil from a similar area. This was quite an unresponsive soil in terms of changing tensile strength, and you can see that by the sensitivity bars alongside the tops of the graphics there. If I go to Sulaimani, this is a soil which comes from the Kurdistan region of Iraq. You can see there a highly significant decrease in tensile strength. That is pretty good news for farmers in that area. This soil is a vertisol. It's renowned for capping, and they lose a lot of drill crops through struggling to break through that cap shortly after drilling. So that's a very positive outcome there. If I now look at the graphic on the right hand side, this is a soil which comes from Israel. They have used recycled wastewater, which obviously does add some contaminants and causes some issue. The soil is quite compact and ends up with a very high tensile strength. If you supply polyhalite, mix that in with that soil at increasing rates, up to a maximum of 50 tons per hectare, which is probably not an agricultural rate, but we've proven the point that yes, there is a positive effect in that you can reduce this tensile strength and reduce its tendency to cap. So all of this is very useful. We've opened your eyes, hopefully, that the fact that you can change soil structure with your choice of fertilizer resource. Now, these are only initial looks. These trials represent 280 tests. But what they do not do is they have not actually looked at the equation which is very common, and that is putting a plant in the soil. So root exudates and calcium obviously interacting, and that is something that we obviously have to develop. We also need to look at the particular clay mineral in each of these soils, and eventually we ought to be able to come up with and parameterize a group of soils and be able to predict what would happen in terms of soil structure. Further, soil structure also has an infiltration, a rate on water infiltration. So what we looked at here is actually absorptivity. Now, absorptivity is a measure of the capacity of a soil to absorb moisture due to capillarity. So it's obviously a component of infiltration rate of your soil. Again, if you find you've got open soil which is poorly structured and heavy downpours of rain or irrigation, it's going to tend to erode, especially if the water cannot be absorbed by the soil, and it'll start to cause rivulets across the soil surface, and you'll end up with a Grand Canyon. In summary, what we're seeing here is that the result which you get from using gypsum is not an indication of the result you'd expect from polyhalite. Clearly, the additional ions, the magnesium and the potassium in this circumstance, does make a difference to absorptivity. Again, is high correlation, 0.73, I believe, and probability 0.001, so a highly significant correlation there. A few pretty pictures of where we are, what we're doing. We're obviously continuing this study. These are trays which are set up, obviously, on a gravel base. Fill it with soil. You end up putting it up to on a slope and collect the runoff. So now we're beginning to look at nutrient movement, nutrient runoff, and solid particle movement and treatment with polyhalite and set amounts of rainfall. So that's about it. I'd just like to thank our collaborators from around the world who provided some of the yield data and have undertaken some of this soil structure testing. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Robert. And you made up 1 minute, and we have to have 2 minutes for questions. It's certainly very impressive. And the result, any questions to Robert?
Morning, Terry.
So I didn't understand the rate of application for your tensile spraying. Were you looking at 5 tons per hectare and 50 tons per hectare of application?
That's correct. Because this was one of the first studies we did on this, we wanted to prove the purpose to start with. Obviously, we'll go back and do things at a more agricultural rate of application, but just to prove that there is an effect, yes, we went at some pretty extreme rates, so I would admit that. Not on that particular test, no, there is not. As I said, this is a first toeing the water. We just wanted to answer a couple of basic questions at the end of first year sets of trials. And this work is actually now a component of an MRES 3-year research project, which hopefully will be a little bit more diligent, more accurate, and answer some of these pretty pertinent questions, cross-referencing other materials, undertaking it at standard agricultural application rates, and more importantly, I think people will want to know whether this is cumulative in its effect, which I think is pretty significant if it is.
What about the cost compared to in terms of potassium compared to conventional potassium fertilizer?
If I may say so, you're asking an agronomist to give you a marketing response. I can't do that. But I would make one comment, that is a multi-nutrient fertiliser, and each nutrient has a financial value. So I don't really consider it fair to compare one of the components.
Fair answer. Okay. I'd like to join me and thank Robert for an interesting talk. So now